Hi everyone, this is Adam Small.
And I'm Jake Moses.
Welcome to our podcast, The Performer's Pathway.
A podcast adventure to help guide and navigate your musical life and career.
As a prelude to every episode, we'd like to remind our listeners that this podcast is about the other side of the musical coin. One side, which you see a lot at our website, mymusicmasterclass.com, is what to do in the practice room. The other side is how to maximize your talent and skills in the real world, and that's what this podcast is about. Also, if you have a few extra seconds to spare,
which is technically only 3 beats at 60 BPM,
please subscribe to our show on your podcast app of choice and rate us 5 stars. You can leave a comment about absolutely anything, too. Go nuts. That small act of kindness will really help us expand our audience and continue to create new episodes.
And lastly, word of mouth is always super helpful. So if you like what you hear, please tell the world.
All right, so we're here today with Randy Gist. He's an old friend. And we took a week off, as you know, from this whole podcast thing, all you millions of listeners, because we felt that it was the right thing to do, because there's a lot of unrest going on in this country, and there's a big movement, and it's important. It's important to us, and it's important to, should be important to everyone. So Randy is a really, really great musician. He writes music, he produces music. He's also a wonderful saxophone player, and we've done some projects together as well. We could easily have him on for a regular episode where we just talk about career stuff, because he's great. He also does his own brand of music coaching, kind of life coaching, motivational speaking thing, which is super hip. And he knows a lot about the business. He's a smart guy. But the reason we specifically wanted him on for this super special episode was to talk about the Black Lives Matter movement. You know, Randy's been posting some super powerful stuff on his social media pages. We've talked about a lot of these points off the air. And basically, I thought it was really, really important for people to hear what he has to say. So without further ado, it's great to have you here, Randy.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm super happy to be here.
Let's just start from the beginning, man. What was your height and weight when you were born? No, let's start after that. Let's start after you were born. And what was it like growing up where you grew up, and how'd it go?
Okay, so I was about 8 pounds, I think. Don't really know how tall I was, but after that, I grew up in Grand Rapids, Michigan, which is a suburb, or sorry, I grew up in Kentwood, Michigan, which is a suburb of Grand Rapids, Michigan. It's the town where Betsy DeVos is from, mm-hmm. So I'm very familiar with Amway and a lot of their business dealings. And in general, it was interesting. I did not grow up in what many would consider a rough neighborhood. I grew up with mostly middle-class, affluent white people. And I myself am a black person, so that makes things immediately kind of complicated, mm-hmm. in a very passive-aggressive sort of way. I never felt like I was in danger in the typical ways that people might be expecting, like, oh, you know, if you live in a bad neighborhood, you're going to be fearful because dangerous things could happen. But I always felt a little bit uncomfortable because I didn't see people that looked like me as often in the neighborhood. I mean, to be fair, Kentwood's an extremely diverse town as a whole. But I feel like the culture is very, you know, Midwestern white. Right. And I didn't know that until I was an adult for the most part. Like, I would definitely feel that things were different. And I was always different. I talked different. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I dressed different. I didn't play basketball. I played soccer. I didn't do the typical things that I kind of thought I was expected to do because I was a black person.
Right.
So that made things kind of tough sometimes. I had hard times sort of like with black people. I was never black enough. And with white people, I was never quite white enough. And the craziest part about it is it's like I didn't really take 100% to either thing. And then I'm realizing as an adult, like, man, like being a black person doesn't have to be this one thing. Like, you don't have to play basketball and you don't have to like hip hop, even though I love hip hop. But it's like you don't have to be into that. You don't have to fit into these stereotypes. In fact, sorry, I'm like already getting off track, but I saw a shirt or a meme the other day that said, what is being African-American? And it's like African with none of the history, American with none of the privilege.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Yeah, man, that's like powerful.
Yeah, that's exactly like what the experience is. It's like, oh man, like I have no home. You know what I mean?
How did you find like balance to be who you are, like when you're growing up? Like, were you just like, this is me, the hell with everybody else? Or was there someone or like a group of people that you kind of like gravitated toward that you can feel comfortable in some way?
I felt like my friends were like if me and all my friends from high school got together, we could summon Captain Planet.
Yeah, that's cool.
It was like the United Nations of high school students in a way.
Yeah, right.
Because we had people, like my friend circle, like, yeah, there were black people, white people, Asian people, Indian people, like you name a continent and we got it covered. You know what I mean?
Nice.
And same thing with financial backgrounds too. Like we had people that didn't, that were not as wealthy, and we had friends that were very wealthy. I mean, relative to the, to the neighborhood. And so it was interesting because within that friend group, that's where I kind of found my comfort and my peace, was that I don't need to be friends with everybody, which I ultimately, by the end of high school, felt like I was friends with everybody. Mm-hmm. But like, I definitely didn't feel like I needed to, fit in with everybody. Cause anytime I tried, it blew up in my face.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a lesson that a lot of people from a lot of races have to learn. I mean, in high school is just, you know, finding your friend group and sticking to it. But I can imagine that in your case, it's a lot more complicated.
Yeah, it was. And the other thing that's tricky is like, I myself, because my parents both grew up extremely poor, you know, my mom being one of 12, mm-hmm. my dad, you know, has two sisters and a half brother, but like they grew up extremely poor. And basically they were disappointed by like the way that Democrats functioned back in the day when they'd come to black neighborhoods and be like, hey, we're going to take care of everything. And then nothing changed. So then eventually they're...
Get the vote. They just go and get that vote. And then they ghost.
Yeah. And then they ghosted. So they were kind of disheartened by that side of it, right? Mm-hmm. Yep. So then I ended up growing up relatively conservative. And then as an adult, now I'm completely the opposite. I'm about as liberal as you can get.
Right.
And only because, not because of the politicians, forget the politicians, it's about, you know, about the movement, but we can talk about that later. But I guess what I'm saying is like, my parents grew up really poor and they followed the American dream and they like, you know, they worked hard and they worked themselves to the bone to get out of those neighborhoods. And unfortunately, like people say, yeah, oh, they're the exception, you know, like they did it, you can do it too. And it's true. But it's just significantly more difficult than you could ever imagine the things that you have to go through to try and get out of those situations.
I'm imagining like if you didn't have that friend group, like right there, right off the bat, like your life probably would be different.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you think of like other people growing up like that, if they didn't have that, then they have to like pick a side. You know what I mean? They don't have the UN of friends to like... to nuzzle in with.
That's the craziest part. That's my life, but this is why I'm starting here, is because imagine if you were like, hey man, I really do take to all these things that white people like, but not because they're white, but because I'm a human being and I just like those things. I didn't, you know, if I grew up in a vacuum per se, right?
Right.
And then no matter what that is, let's say you're the whitest black dude that could ever be. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? When you walk into a new situation and someone looks at your face, they don't know that. They don't know anything about you. You are black because you're black.
Right. Yep.
And so immediately all the baggage, all the things that come with that, you're going to be judged accordingly. So that's why I'm saying like for myself, it's like, and as an adult, it's like, man, even like what's crazy is like white people, you have two parties realistically to choose from in this country. And I think that sucks. Two isn't a lot, but if you're like a black person in this country, you pretty much, if you have a brain between those ears, you're going to figure out quickly, if you do some homework, that you really only have one choice. And it's not a very good one, but it's the only one you've got.
I mean, it's not fault proof, that's for sure. And you know, and going back to like what you're saying, I just want to, you know, go back because you're saying a lot of good stuff and it's also fast. I don't want to gloss over anything. I mean, when you say that you walk into a room and someone right away knows you're black, like we talked a few days ago and we had this long conversation. And, you know, one of the things I was saying is I'm Jewish, right? And there's plenty of people who hate me because I'm Jewish. And I'm not religious at all, but culturally I'm Jewish. The difference between when I walk into a room is that no one knows I'm Jewish by looking at my face. I just look like a white guy. And right away, if you go somewhere, you look black. And that is something that someone can judge instantly without even saying a word to you. They don't know that if you like Dungeons and Dragons, or if you like hip hop, or if you like whatever the case is, or if you're a brain surgeon, a musician, anything. But they can make a lot of judgments before they see you.
And it seems to always be the worst. They're always they just jump to the worst.
Yeah. I can't. Yeah. For me, like, I have a mask of being a white guy. And we also talked about the fact of that when I went to Cameroon and Ghana with different bands in Togo and Equatorial Guinea in Africa, that I was the only white guy in a lot of situations of hundreds or thousands of people, maybe me and like two others. And I remember thinking that not only is this something that a black person would deal with all the time, and you said, yeah, all the time, I feel like that.
All the time.
But I also didn't feel scared in that situation because I was with a band that was cool and everyone was friendly with me. And I could also say that that has got to be the opposite, you know, with you a lot of the time, that you can sense a hostility and that you can sense people.
Yeah, well, look, man, like I play saxophone in a lot of wedding bands and corporate bands, right? And the number of times I play a game every time, I'm like, okay, let's play Where's Waldo, right?
Right.
And I'm like, okay, we're at the gig. I show up, and by the end of the night, every night, I try and count. Like, let's say there's a wedding in particular. I'm like, how many black people are at this wedding not working?
Yeah.
Right. And the number is always like 1 to 3 or 0. And it's like, the craziest part about it, and this is a giant pet peeve, and I have a really tough time on these gigs sometimes, but like the father of the bride will come up and he's about to give his speech to his daughter, his beautiful white daughter, and tell her about how great she is. And it's her wedding, as he should. But there's one part that always rubs me the wrong way. And he says, you know, my daughter, she's a great person and blah, blah, blah. She's traveled the whole world. You know, she went on a trip here and she went on a trip there. And I'm like, wow, bro, your daughter seems to be so wealthy and worldly that you could A, afford one of these wedding bands, which I know start probably at 10K and upward.
Yeah, I would think more than that.
Yeah, I do too. And it's like, okay, your daughter's so worldly. She's been all over this planet and she couldn't find one black person good enough to invite as a guest to her wedding of 100 guests and up.
Yeah.
That's what you're telling me, that you couldn't find one. But you're so smart and you're so worldly. And I know for a fact, because I'm a black person, that there are millions and millions of amazing black human beings on this planet and you couldn't find one. That's embarrassing.
Yeah, that is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Never actually thought about that.
Week after week, I go to these weddings. You know what I mean? Yeah, I might have
like two in a weekend. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, I've seen in my lifetime at this point, I've seen hundreds of people get married, maybe more, right? And it's like, and it's like week after week after week after week. Or you go to, you know, and the worst part, oh my gosh, you're going to a wedding at a country club. Oh yeah. And when I show up to the country club and I got my saxophone on my back, and the security walks up and they are fast. Oh, yeah. Oh, excuse me, sir, what are you doing here? Well, trust me, it's not even in my like best interest to show up here because I don't even feel safe.
Right.
Because I know that you could call the cops and they could come and any number of things resulting in my death could happen.
Basically, so, it can get out of control as they see it fit.
As they see fit. Right. Like, and I'm like, dude, I don't come like I just want to tell them like, bro, I don't even want to be here. This is the last place on earth I want to be. Why do you think I would be here? I'm here for work, you idiot. Like, get out of my face. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I go practice scales in the field because it's nice grass. Like, no.
I mean, that viral video of, the woman accosting the man watching birds on a bench in Central Park could have went easily into a direction of him being shot.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what's so, I mean, you know, I'm trying not to curse, but that's what's so messed up.
Yeah, it's baffling. I'm like, how is this? Like, what is there to talk about? Yeah. Like, it's so obvious.
Right. To even get on, like, the other side, like what Adam was saying before, I I spent time in Nigeria, and like we were traveling, I was there with the embassy, and we were traveling in like, you know, freaking armored vehicles and stuff. We basically just stayed in our huge hotel. It's kind of like a diplomatic hotel city of itself. But like I was surrounded by all black people with machine guns, because that's how like Abuja is. Like there's security everywhere.
That's the way it is in a lot of countries.
And all I ever felt was just super welcomed by every single person. It's like I'm surrounded by guns. I'm like the random Lebanese dude. And like every time I'd run into someone, they'd be like, hey, like, how's your stay? Are you comfortable? You know what I mean? Like, and they all had guns. It's like,
right.
I know.
I can't even.
Like, so dig this. My wife and I, and this kind of, I have a thing about cottages, right? But we're going to go backwards into that. But my thing that really irks me is I'll have a lot of my white friends, and they're really great people. They mean well. And they want to share an experience with me, right? So they'll be like, man, you know, me and my wife or me and my friends just got back from Italy or France or, you know, any country on the planet that is not the United States. And they'll be like, oh, we had such a great time. It's so beautiful. We did this. We did that. Blah, blah, blah. It was so great. I say, okay, cool. But immediately I know that I'm like, no, I'm cool. Like, I probably can't go there. They don't know that, but I know that. So I messed up, because on our honeymoon, my wife and I, we were like, where do you want to go? Because she really wants to travel. I travel a lot for work. She does not. She wants to travel. So I'm like, cool. She's like, I want to go to Italy. I was like, great. Let's give it a shot. We go to Italy and have 8 of the worst days of my life.
Right. Expensive ones, too.
Expensive, which are supposed to be some of the happiest days of my life. And I know that. Like, I'm not a big vacation person anyway. But we go. And it's just like we're getting kind of followed places that we go. We go to restaurants. The service is not very good. People don't look you in the eye. Somebody once, like, they were like making fun of us in Italian, and you could tell by the gestures and the laughing, but I couldn't translate. And then at the end, as we're walking out, they're like, learn to speak Italian. And they're like making, like, laughing at us and pointing. And it's just like this whole thing. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like, but it's just like nonstop passive aggressive things like that, that just kind of ruin the experience. Yeah. And I've kind of, the only good thing, this was awesome, is that I ran into Jeff Coffin and then ran into my friend Rashawn Ross, and then got to go meet Dave Matthews and go to a Dave Matthews concert. Right. So that was awesome. Thank you, Rashawn.
Jeff's great. He's a great player.
Yeah, he's incredible. But then I got home. And I talked to my Italian friends, and they're like, oh, right. Sorry, I forgot to tell you, like, Italians are racist. And I was like, oh, okay. But to give it some perspective, I'm also like, I'm trying to be reasonable. I'm like, okay, it's a primarily homogenized society. Mm-hmm. They don't see a lot of black people. And the only black people that I think they're seeing primarily are very unwealthy. They're on the street, and they're trying to sell products to feed their families. But it is not seen in good taste.
Yep.
And so they judge those people and they treat them terribly. So that's the tough part, is I don't think there's a place on this earth that and that's why I said earlier, like, I don't have a home, but I don't think there's a place on this earth I can go anywhere. Cause if I go to Africa, well, I'm an African American.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
To them. I hate the term. I'm a black person, but like, they're going to see, oh, you're black, but you're American.
Right.
So you belong over there. But I don't belong in my own country, because you've got people that tell you, if you don't like it, you can leave. So I don't belong here. And anywhere else in the world, again, they're just going to see you as a black person, and they don't like that. So no matter what I do, no matter, you know, how many TV shows I play on, no matter how many movies I'm involved with, no matter what I do, unless I'm like, yeah, there's really not, like, my hands are tied. You know what I'm saying?
I think what it is it's just, and I've spoken to a lot of people about this, including Randy. I think it's just about being able to put the shoe on the other foot, right? Meaning that you have to see if you can just at least give it a clear mind and try to put yourself in someone else's situation and understand a little bit about what they're going through. And I think that that's hard if you don't really interact with black people or, you know, South American people or people from Asia or whoever it is that you don't like or don't understand their culture. And, you know, I understand certain scenarios very well. For instance, how many times have I been on a gig in New York, and then you hang out at the place after you play with your friends, and then you're there with the horn player or your friend, and he can't get a cab. Like, this is not a joke, you know? And then he'll say, hey, Adam, can you hail me a cab? And I'll do it, of course. And that shit happens a lot. I mean, you know, and this is just, that's like a benign thing compared to what we're talking about here. Also, totally. Like, for instance, when I was on the road, you know, you go to certain states, which I won't mention by name, and you go to a restaurant off of whatever, Route 80 or somewhere else. Now you're getting to know where I'm going here at Route 80. Now I'm really going to say. But, you know, and you have a mixed band, mixed race, right? You have, you know, a few black people, a couple white people, some Latinos, and you will not get served. Or, and I've had that happen, not as a white person with my wife or my white friends, but in mixed company. And yeah, that's happened to me. And when that shit happened to me, it was a wake-up call. Wow, this must be like daily life.
And it's minutely. It's momently. And the worst part about it is the psychological damage, because it's not a thing where I'm like, I love myself. I love black people. I love all people, but I especially love black people because we need a little extra love right now. And it's like, I'm like, dude, like, it's just the fact that when I leave the house, I have to think about it all the time. Like, I'm walking in, I'm walking around in my own neighborhood. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, and I know that the police could come and stop me and be like, sir, you know, do you belong here? Or people or neighbors that just don't know me, they could call the police not knowing that, yeah, I live in this neighborhood now. You know what I mean? Like,
easily. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Jesus.
That's like, okay. Yeah. Like, cool. Like, you can't, again, I can't feel welcome in my own home.
Right.
You know what I mean? That, yeah. That I pulled myself up by my bootstraps to buy, and I'm still not good enough. So it's like, and I guess that's kind of the reason earlier that I mentioned the whole, like, okay, like, why does it even matter if you grew up with mostly white kids or mostly black kids? Mm-hmm. Is because if you grew up in the hood, if you grew up with like black, like if you grew up with only black people and especially like poor black people, then and you're really like deep in the culture, well, it almost goes without saying that those people are going to have a hard time. And people of other cultures and even some wealthy black people are going to treat you as though you're less, which is bullshit. These people are people, first of all. And the reason that they are there mostly comes from inequality and wealth gaps, which we can talk about redlining in a moment. We can talk about that. Me being like, okay, like I've played the white man's game. I speak eloquently. Like I speak the way they speak, per se, whatever that means, which is also silly because languages change. But it's like I follow the rules. I worked hard. I have 2 degrees. I have a master's degree. You know what I'm saying? It's like I've done everything that you were supposed to do, and I still walk into like, you know, restaurants and can't get service or like get treated weird in certain parts of town or in the country or the world. So that's kind of all I'm saying.
Right.
Know.
And you live in Los Angeles, which is, you know, Los Angeles and New York. You'd think that it would be a little easier, and compared to the rest of the country, probably is, but doesn't make it easy, right?
It's the safest place on earth as far as I'm concerned, and it's not safe.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I ask a friend like back east all the time, just like, because I just watch people's reactions on the internet of everything that goes on, and they're always just like outraged that people are doing quote unquote bad things during all this.
The looting, like, you're talking about?
Yeah, but it's like, I asked my friend, I'm like, dude, how are you not just angry all the time? Like, because you talked about it affects you emotionally and like psychologically. To me, like my blood, I would just be crazy angry like every day if I had to deal with the shit all day.
You're like constantly swinging back and forth between like absolute despair.
Yeah.
And a complete lack of hope to, furious, angered, and feeling like there's nothing you can do about it. But I feel like, again, it's built in. It's designed to be that way.
Yeah.
And speaking of that, okay, so there's a story I have. I was teaching a summer camp. in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and it was a six week camp for underprivileged kids who were more likely to fail. Like the graduation rate was 50% for Grand Rapids public schools. So I was working with these kids, and I'm in the music section. Like, the kids rotate, they go to different stations throughout the day, and then we get to do the music thing. So these kids are like cussing at each other. They're like fighting all the time. They got a whole bunch of issues. I'm like, man, okay, these some bad kids, right? This is a rough situation. So we're a few weeks into this program, and there's this girl. The age gap also is like between like 11 and 13, 14 is like the age of these kids, middle school. So we're a few weeks in, and I'm talking to one of the students. There's a girl, she's like 12, and I notice she has a tattoo on her arm. And I'm like, oh, cool. Like, I don't know how you got that, but what's your tattoo say? And she's like, oh, it says my brother's name. I was like, okay. I was like, why is your brother's name on your arm? And she's like, well, he got killed. I was like, if you don't mind me asking, do you want to tell me the story? Or can you tell me the story? So she's like, yeah, if you'll listen. I said, absolutely. So she starts telling me, she is from a single parent home. It's her mother, herself, and her siblings. She's got a few brothers and sisters. And her mom was at work, and her brother would walk her and her siblings home from school. But I guess there was a gang that was after her brother, and they broke into her house when they were all home waiting on mom to come home from work. And her brother took her and her siblings and threw them into a closet, shut the closet, and the gang members came up and shot him to death in front of her. So she and all of her siblings watched her brother get murdered, and that's why she has this tattoo on her arm. And I had this realization that it makes perfect sense. Like, the reason these kids are struggling is because of the environment that they're in. For what reason would this girl want, like, be focusing on math homework, English homework, science?
No way.
That is beyond secondary, tertiary. Like, let's keep going down the list. It's the last thing on her list of priorities, because she is primarily concerned with survival. Am I going to get shot today by someone else in my community, or the police, or anyone? Like, what? She's living an adult life in a 12-year-old body. Like, it's just unfair. You know what I mean?
Well, it's weird to me, because, like, when I hear a story like that, I think of all the parallels. Like, a wartime situation, right? Think about all throughout history, all throughout war. Like, if you do something during a war to survive, usually you get away with it. You know what I mean? So it's like, oh, you're in this environment right now, so you have to stay alive. So whatever you do is kind of like, it's a gray area. You get away with most stuff. Then why? It's like, you're living in a wartime if you're growing up in a neighborhood like that. So why aren't you excused to survive and do what you have to do?
On that tip, dude, like, but the same thing kind of, it's not the same for me, because I didn't grow up in that kind of neighborhood exactly, but it's almost like that Get Out situation. You know what I'm saying? That's what that movie's about, right?
Yeah.
It's like, she was living in a literal war zone, but it's like, I'm living almost like, oh no, I'm living after the war. Like, yeah, your side lost, and you're living in a community of people that think of you as less, right?
Yep.
And so it's like, yeah, you're always a second class citizen. Anything can happen to you under any circumstances. And if someone, like when I was in school, I would be with another kid, and like a white kid, and we would be doing the exact same thing, and I would get in trouble, and I would get sent to the hall, and he could stay in class and finish his homework.
Yeah.
That would happen like every day in school, like elementary school, middle school. It got better, because I was, you know, to be fair, I did talk a lot, but it would be things where I was one in one with my friend right next to me, and I would get in more trouble. And so the more important piece of this, though, isn't that, like, okay, because it's very easy for someone to dive in and say, oh, well, you see, yeah, the problem is these, you know, black on black crime and bad neighborhoods and all that. No, you have to understand, and you have to, first of all, if you can empathize with this girl, like, yeah, obviously she can't be studying because she's concerned about her survival. But guess what? That kid in the gang, why do kids join gangs? Because sometimes they have to. to survive in those neighborhoods.
Yeah. It's literal protection.
It's
protection.
Literal protection from the police and from other people.
And the gang that you're, if you say no to them, then you now
then
have
they're
to be
gonna
protected
mess you
from
up.
Them. It's just right. Like, there's no, how do you win in that situation?
I can't even fathom how to escape that situation when people say, oh yeah, you know, you can make whatever you want of yourself in this country. It is a little bit different, isn't it?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and the thing that makes it even crazier is think about this, and this is kind of where redlining, property taxes, all that stuff starts to tie in, is because it's like, you start with like slavery, right? And unfortunately, because people don't like to study history, because it's uncomfortable, and it sometimes can be boring, but it's very uncomfortable.
Also the South wrote the history after the Civil War, which is like,
yeah,
how did you do that? You guys lost the war and you got to write the freaking history of it? Like,
yeah, and that's what we learn, right? So it's like these neighborhoods, like you finish slavery, right? And then everyone's like, oh, Emancipation Proclamation, we're all good, it's over, like we're buddies, like that's it. And it's like, nah, bro, like we have a long way to go from here. And so what they do is like, oh well, you're free to do whatever you want, right? But then they write stuff in the laws like, oh, well, we're going to redline off this neighborhood and we're going to, I forget what this is. I just watched a video. I posted it actually today and I'm still like getting clarification on this. But it's basically like, they're like, yeah, we're going to have public housing after the Great Depression. They had public housing and it was available for white people and then in certain neighborhoods. But black people couldn't qualify for those homes because segregation was still going down.
Right.
That was still okay. So they're like, okay, mm-hmm. white people on this side, black people, you can get these homes. But the homes were much crappier. And they're basically like, yeah, you can't move into these neighborhoods. But then as the housing markets would appreciate and inflation would happen, those houses would in the white neighborhood went up, you know, 4-10 times the value, 20 times the value, but the black neighborhoods, they just kept like destroying them. And then the thing that kind of breed what I, in my opinion, in my estimation, like the black on black crime thing basically is like, if you took a bunch of dogs and you put them in a small battered cage, you didn't feed them, you hit them all the time, and I'm talking about the police, you do things to make it difficult for them to grow. Anytime they grow, like in Tulsa, right? They just smash you, right?
Yep.
It's like, then they throw you a tiny piece of meat. What do you think those dogs are going to do? They're going to kill each other because they're hungry and they're starving and they have a lack of resources because the person, the owner, because white people owned us, the owner has removed the resources from that area because it's built into the laws that way.
Yeah.
For you not to succeed. And then they throw you a piece of meat, or they throw, I mean, if you're lucky, they throw crack in the neighborhood. They put guns in the neighborhood because we didn't have access to guns either. We were slaves. How did we get a hold of guns? How would we be able to do it? When you're coming out of slavery, we had no money. We had nothing. We literally had nothing. So anything that we had to build by working and so on and so forth. And do you think that your average white person wanted black people getting access to guns? No, because they're going to shoot you because you were just slaves, right? Because you just, you know, you were slave owners. So you're not going to be their favorite person per se. So, yeah. So what do? They keep you locked in your neighborhood. You can't leave because those white neighborhoods are going to be police infested. Which police also came from slave catchers. If we don't know that, you should look into the history of that. And so it's like, yeah, we're gonna make you stay in an area that is impoverished, and we're also going to give you only resources to destroy yourself. And then they follow suit because that makes sense. And people are like, well, maybe if they just didn't do that, what choice did we have?
It's always like a weird apologetic like situation after basically either genocide or just like slavery. It's like what we did with Native Americans. It's like, oh, sorry, here are like some places you guys can like stay. First of all, it's like you can't apologize and you can't make it better. So you just have to like, it has to just give, just treat me like a human.
Yeah.
Let's try that. You know?
Speaking of that, like, so when I was growing up, again, my parents did great. Like they worked so hard. They're amazing. My parents are incredible people. And I'm like, one, like, how'd you do it? It's insane. But two, like, one of the hardest things growing up, and it's so extra, but because there are, again, I have privilege as an American, and I got to say that, like, there are people in other countries who are literally just getting bombs dropped on them minutely. Not that that doesn't happen to us in this country, because it does by white people. But that being said, it's like I would grow up in this neighborhood, and my friends would come up to me and be like, oh, you know, what are you doing this weekend? I'm like, playing in the backyard? Like, what are you doing? And they'd be like, oh, we're going up to my parents' cottage. Or we're going up to our family's cottage up north. And I'd be like, what's a cottage? I'm like, I don't even know what that is. Yeah. I didn't know what a cottage was until I was like in high school. Because my white friends, I gathered that it was a second home. But I was like, okay. I was like, man, you guys got two houses? My parents worked really hard for us to have this one house.
Yeah.
And you guys got two. And I'm like, they're like, yeah, you know, it's my grandma's, or it's just been in the family. Oh, it's just been in the family? Well, okay. So they say, you know, they're telling me about how great it is, and they take it for granted because they don't know any different, right?
Yeah.
They don't know that everyone doesn't have a cottage, but we all don't, especially black people. And to add insult to injury, right? It's like they have a cottage, and they're like, oh, we just go up north. And I'm like, even if I like had a cottage, I can't go up north. You know why? Because I'm not welcome.
Right.
So it's just like there's like literally nothing you again can do about that.
I mean, again, with all this, and we're going to continue this conversation, these are just baseline points. And all I'm hoping for this whole episode is just to provide a rational perspective for someone that might not have thought of these things. And I think we're doing that.
I hope so.
Yeah. You know, I mean, that's the best we can do. But how has this manifested in your music career? I mean, is there anything specific, or is it just kind of the same points that we've been making?
It's pretty much the same points. I mean, you know, going to the airport is not always fun, depending on what countries you're in or what states you're in, right? Sometimes things, again, there's a lot of police in the airports. So sometimes that stuff, it's generally been fine, you know. It's just more of the same, like, weird look stuff, awkward situations where you have to basically, like, make a case that, yes, I'm a professional. Like, people want to talk to you like you're a child or treat you like you're the help. That happens all the time. But that's also, like, a music thing. But I just feel like it gets compounded on by being black. The thing that actually is kind of more weird and uncomfortable is, like, at least with the music industry and similar to sports, is basically the appropriation thing gets kind of weird. And again, like, for me, I'm like, no, music is beautiful. Music's for everyone. And I'm with that. But at this point, I can't be with it because there's a lot of people who can enjoy our music, can enjoy, like, you enjoy me, like, actors. You love black actors. You love black athletes. And won't support them as human beings in their causes. It's like the Mandingos all over again, right? It's like, yeah, you guys can kill each other and be entertaining. You can entertain me. But as soon as anyone has something to say about how they would like to live, it gets shot down. And a lot of people say, well, yeah, but you're rich and you have more money than me. And it's like, man, there's no amount of money that I can have to basically still, like, to earn white privilege, or, you know what I mean? Or to be seen as an equal. I don't want white privilege. It's awful. It's the worst thing that's ever happened to the world. But it's like, just to be seen as an equal, there's no amount of money that you can get to do that. And so I think a lot of people sometimes confuse those things, which I think is also on purpose. Like, ultra rich white people want poor white people to blame their problems on black people, when really it's the rich they should be going after. They're the ones taking your money. Rich people don't work. They invest money in the stock market, and they make money off of capitalism. They make money from doing nothing.
Sometimes they inherited that money, you know?
And sometimes they inherited that money in which to make money, so you really didn't, I mean, and sometimes they become president without having to work at all because they had money, then they just invest it. And it's not even investing wisely, because there's no wise, because the stock market, you don't know what it's going to do unless someone tells you, which is insider trading, and then you go to jail. Unless you're white, then you don't go to jail.
Did you ever see that movie Get Hard with, you know, Will Ferrell?
I did not.
In this one part, his boss, which is his father-in-law, he's explaining, and this is, I promise this is going to tie in. he's saying, you know, he has this Commodore 64 or something behind glass, and he's like, I keep that there to remind me of what I built, because I made this company with my own two hands. And he goes into this whole, like, you know, story about how he's like self-made. I built this, and I built everything, you know, with this computer and a loan from my father for $1 million, you know. And it's just like, yep. I mean, you know.
That's it. That's basically it in a nutshell, dude. Like, it's like starting with cheat codes in a video game. It's like, oh, man, well, yeah, I already have infinite money.
I have super
money.
Strength and 9 lives. And
Yeah, it's so much easier. Like, yeah, if I could build a company right now, if I had $1 million, and it's like, okay, build a company.
Easy.
I could do it.
Yeah.
Easy. What kind of company do you want? I have the assets already. The hardest part is accumulating the money in the first place. And it's similar in real estate, right?
Yeah.
It's like, dude, you want to buy a house? Paying the monthly isn't hard. That's not the hard part. The hard part is the down payment. It's that startup money that they want it. That's the barrier to keep you from getting a home. Because in a lot of cases, rents, similar, this happened in redlining, the rents were more expensive than the mortgages.
Yeah.
How does that make any kind of sense? That, you know what I mean? I mean, it makes sense in terms of the way capitalism works. It makes sense, yeah, to cover the overhead. I'm providing you a service, and blah, blah, blah. But the fact that it's set up that way for people with less money to lose and for people with more money to win. And if we know, and again, that's why the systemic racism thing is a thing, is because if we can agree that if you start out with more money and you can make money from having money, that you're at a very distinct advantage. And then realizing that, okay, cool, like whether slavery ended or like right when slavery ended, even if there was no segregation, even if they were like, okay, for real, we're all equals, it's on, we can all be exactly the same, it still wasn't fair because you guys had a several hundred year lead in gaining assets and valuable things.
Yeah.
All you had was like your
freedom in quotes. That was it.
Right. And the property, like, let's say you wanted that nice beachfront property. It was already purchased.
Yeah.
All those homes were occupied. There was no more space. You know where there was space? Where there was trash land.
Yeah.
They weren't like, oh, you're free now. Here's some nice stuff.
Yeah.
No, they were like, okay, we'll let you work for yourselves a little bit. And then when you get something, we'll destroy it.
Yeah.
I want to bring this into something that I want to see how you're going to answer this. And I know that we've talked about it, but I think it's important to hear your perspective for the people listening. When people say, oh, you know, it is terrible what happened here to George Floyd, but the looting, you know, do we really have to have the looting? You know, the looting just has to stop.
Okay, so I will start out by saying, and I posted something on my Facebook about this and on Instagram. Realistically, when you're trying to get rid of weeds in your yard, let's say we're talking about dandelions. Mm. When you try to get rid of dandelions, do you cut off the head of the dandelion? No, we don't do that. Why? Because when you try and cut off the head of a dandelion, it just spreads. And what do you get? More dandelions.
Right.
Right? So if you really want to take care of the dandelion, if that's really the issue, what do you have to do? You have to pull it out by the roots.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no confusion about that. I'm sure there's white, brown, orange, whatever color humans you want that understand how to take care of dandelions, right?
Mm-hmm.
So looting and rioting just so happens to be the flower of the dandelion. It is an aftermath. If there weren't protests, there'd probably be no one looting or rioting. There'd be nothing to loot or riot about. But protests in itself aren't bad. Protests are our American right. White people can do it. They can bring guns if they want. The problem was that a black man was murdered. So if you want, like, and I'm not advocating for looting or rioting.
No, of course
I'm
not.
Empathizing with people who are in pain. I've seen people get mad at video games and throw the controller at the wall and break the TV. So if you can get mad about a video game and not get as angry about murder, you need to reassess your priorities, first and foremost. So I'm saying if you can, again, if the looting and the rioting is such an important issue to you, then you should be on the front lines of the Black Lives Matter movement trying to stop the thing that caused the protests, which indirectly caused the looting and the rioting. Even if the people who are looting and rioting are, again, completely like unrelated or related. It really doesn't matter. It's just a simple cause and effect. I don't like rioting and loots or looting, then I have to stop the protest. What do the protesters want? They want people to stop murdering them. Seems simple enough to me. That solves that problem. And realistically, like, I don't think that looting and rioting is really what these people are that concerned with. That's not really what their concern is.
Oh, that's total scapegoat. That's all. They just jump on the first thing as
anything else that they can deal with. And it's similar to, like, you know, if I had superpowers, let's say I could shoot beam. I got like Cyclops. I can shoot beams out of my eyes, like Superman or whoever, mm-hmm. for 24 hours, right? But in order to do it, I got to slaughter a goat. Okay, cool. I'll slaughter my goat. I get my superpowers. I got them for 24 hours. Well, the thing is, I bet you're going to start buying a lot of goats because you're going to be like, man, this is awesome. Yeah. I have superpowers. You get addicted to that power. And so then people are going to start coming for you and being like, yo, dude, can you stop doing that? Like, stop killing the goats. Mm-hmm. And they'll say, well, the goats, blah, blah, blah. And they'll do anything. They'll be like, well, you know, the goats kind of like it. The goats kind of like getting murdered. They'll say anything they can say to maintain their power because they get addicted to that feeling or that thing or the, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, man.
What would I do without this? You know what I mean?
And I've seen you say this. I've seen a lot of people say this. Basically, I think it was a video you posted on your Facebook from someone else. I remember that one of the first lines was, if the conversation doesn't start with George Floyd, then where's the conversation? You know, like, like, you can't just be like, well, the looting's terrible. But, you know, because when you're talking about the protests happened in many forms and they were never acceptable, right?
Colin Kaepernick was incredible.
But that, like, was inappropriate.
Because you know why it was inappropriate? Because two things. Oh, because sports are more important. Like football, you're saying football is more important than people having their American rights taken away. Right. Football, the Pledge of Allegiance.
All he did was kneel. He didn't. Yeah, he didn't shoot like a 9mm into the crowd or anything. You know,
he exercised his American right to First Amendment, right, freedom of speech. His right to protest things that and the crazier part yet, here's the craziest part about it. If what Colin Kaepernick isn't the most American thing that's ever happened, like, I don't know what is, but it's like, dude, when people say things like, oh, if you don't like your country, leave it. It's like, I love this country.
Right.
I have the ability to change it. That's what's beautiful about our country, because there are other countries where you don't have choices and you can't change it.
Right.
And so Colin Kaepernick is doing what's within his right to make a strong suggestion that, hey, something kind of weird happened. Somebody got shot. I don't think we should do that anymore. And so he peacefully took a knee after consulting with someone in the military. Yo, bro, is this a respectful way to do it? And the dude was like, yeah, bro.
That's
what we fought for, was for you to be able to do this on behalf of all Americans.
He didn't even burn a flag. It wasn't like that. He didn't say, I hate America. He said, I want to change America. I know what you're
saying. But that's not what, again, and that's why, for whatever it's worth, like, me posting educational videos, like, some people, I've had some really amazing responses from people, and it's like almost brought me to tears. But realistically, I think we almost have to, or like we're saying, with, like, you have to get to the root of things. I think we've made the assumption in this country, on this planet, that everyone's on the same page that racism is a bad thing. Because people even avoid the term. But I don't think we can move on until we've, as a collective species, have decided that racism is, in fact, not good. Racism is a bad thing. And I don't think everyone's sold on that. And so what we argue is whether or not something is or isn't racist. And because people are trying to avoid that conversation, that realistically, you don't mind racism all that much. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really bother you that
much. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Some people don't think that racism is bad. They might have to say that publicly, but they don't. They think that some people are better than other people, or that some people are scarier than other people.
Maybe it's that thing where people don't realize that they don't think, like, they might not realize it in themselves that, mm-hmm. oh, I guess I don't think racism is bad because you're not, and it's obvious to me because I'm like, well, something racist happened and you had no reaction, or the opposite reaction where you're like trying to make excuses for why something was okay. And it's like, you shouldn't be trying to make this okay. You should be trying to fight this. And that's where that beautiful poem, "And Then They Came for Us," like, that's the whole point. It's like, dude, okay, like, fine, like, let racism live, right? Don't worry. Once you kill all the black people, you'll find something else. You'll run out of people to kill. So then it's going to be like, oh, we ran out of black people. Well, then we'll get the Mexicans. Oh, we got all the Mexicans and the Latinos and everybody from you know, that part of the world. Yeah. And then they're eventually going to get you.
Redheads will go, and then left-handed people, and it'll be like the, you know.
Oh, dude, I remember during, like, you know, post 9/11, there was a collection of comedians. They were all, like, you know, Arab type, like me. And, like, they went on tour, and they were kind of just joking about how basically they were the new black people of, like, everyone hates Arabs now.
I remember
that.
You
know what I mean?
I remember.
And it was at that time, it was like, it was funny, but it's like, I've dealt with being quote unquote different, but I have never in my life ever felt A, threatened, or B, like, it was fully really like a racial thing. Like, people joke around me when I was growing up and stuff like that, but it was always just like harmless shit. You know what I mean?
It's different, man.
So
yeah.
it's crazy. I can imagine it, but I can't really imagine it because I've never actually felt that way.
And that's powerful.
I just want to interject and say all buildings matter. Sorry, I just want to say that all buildings matter. Sorry, go ahead, Adam.
No, I got nothing after that. That's a crowd pleaser. Oh,
but that's Michael Che's Netflix stand-up, by the way. Michael Che, check him out, because he talks about how ridiculous that is, that we have to fight. I'm actually trying to argue with people over whether or not they can just say out loud, hey man, your life matters. That's all it is. Can you just say that? That's that hard for you? And you want to talk about, like, that's the thing, it's like American to be tough and strong and stuff like that. You're that strong and you can't say something that simple? I wouldn't trust you with anything.
It's also just like, you don't have to say anything. It's like with this J.K. Rowling thing, it's like, why do you need to say anything about transgender? Like, what's the point of you? Like, you have to say something because you're a figure of some notoriety? Like, what? Like, how about just shut up?
Right.
Like, because they always be follow silent. With, like, yeah, like, oh, I love this quote unquote person that I'm attacking. I love them. It's like, well, no, you don't. And like, if you did, you would either just shut up or help them fight their cause. It's just like, there's
speaking of which, help them fight their cause. Okay, so this is another thing, because we've kind of. I hate the black on black crime thing, and it's so stupid, and it doesn't actually, it's a separate issue. In fact, maybe we should talk about that. The from a different angle, at least. Yeah. Why Black Lives Matter has nothing to do with black on black crime is because when black on black crimes happen, the justice system works exactly the way it was designed. Those people get prosecuted, they get in trouble. Actually, it works improperly because those people go to jail for significantly worse times or more time. And I'm of any level of crime, right? Theft, you know.
Well, drug laws are totally catered to that, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Like crack, for instance, is in cocaine are very, very different in the sentencing.
Yeah, one's a white drug for rich people.
That's what I'm saying.
And hippies, and one's the one that they gave to black people to try and
kill
destroy
them.
Their neighborhoods.
And that's what I'm saying. It's like, someone that's really down on their luck and has enough to use can go away for a very long time.
Right. And so that's the point. It's like, okay, in black neighborhoods, and we could take Chicago as an example, those people are either A, getting arrested, or B, being murdered by police. Or each other. Whichever. But the justice system functions. It's like, oh man, look, that guy, the police came and the bad guy's gone. Wow. But then whenever there's like white people that kill or rape people behind dumpsters or do anything, all of a sudden the justice system just gets a little fuzzy. Things take a little bit longer and things don't really work quite the way they're supposed to work. So that's what the argument is about. It's not about whether or not black people are killing each other. Yes, they are killing each other. And it's because, again, of redlining and the way that the system is set up to make you kill each other. That makes sense. But the argument at the moment, let's leave that. Let's table black on black crime. They're not protesting that. We are specifically protesting the relationship of the police to black people and the justice system to black people as it compares to the way the justice system treats white people. That's what this is. That's it. So black on black crime is literally apples and oranges.
Can I compare this to something that we talked about the other day? Because I think this is a really good point. I don't want you to miss it.
Yeah.
When we talked about people come out with the stat that more white people are killed by cops than black people.
So and it's also one of the most annoying bullshit statistics that people try and pull out. But they'll say, oh, you know, the police kill more white people than black people. I'm like, okay. Let's look at the let's look at what it takes to be considered a death, a tally, we'll say. So when they killed George Floyd, the first autopsy that happened came back. They were trying to say it was based on pre-existing conditions and that he had COVID or he was having a heart attack. They were trying to find any sort of thing they could find to say that the police didn't kill him. And then they had a second opinion. The family hired a second opinion to come in. And then it became asphyxiation. Yes, he died from having a knee driven into his neck with several people sitting on top of him, so on and so forth.
I love how they had to spend money to prove that.
Right. Black people had to invest
the video
more
wasn't
money.
Enough.
Probably back into the white community, right?
Yeah,
not
exactly.
Enough. So they had to get a second opinion. But let's say that the family wasn't brave enough to get that second opinion, and the autopsy came back, and it turns out, yeah, he died from a heart attack, or he slipped and he fell, like the old man the other day that got pushed by the police, right? Oh, he slipped and he fell. So the first autopsy comes back, and they say, if they had used that in court, well, guess what? That wouldn't count for a police killing. That would count as a heart attack. So the tally is going to show every time a white police officer kills another guy, they're going to say, oh yeah, you know, he did it and he did it in the line of duty, and they write it down. But for all the misconduct where they kill the black guy in cold blood and they're like, well, he slipped on a banana peel and fell on the gun and the trigger pulled and he died. Or yeah. He choked himself, or yeah, you know, Dave Chappelle, sprinkle some crack on him, like whatever it takes. Yeah. Those deaths don't count towards that statistic. And that's why the numbers are higher. They are inflated, and the black numbers are deflated. And it's very obvious. There's nothing really to argue there.
That story, and since it's so timely, I mean, it's just happened. And in that one instance, it kind of explains everything, doesn't it? I mean, there are a lot of black people that do not have the funding to hire super lawyers or pay for any kind of investigation. And these things just go unchecked.
It's like having a court appointed attorney, right?
Right.
Everybody knows that guy sucks.
Yeah.
You don't want that guy. Like, if you get in trouble with the law, the last person you want is the default setting. Like, yo, dude, I just bought a Yamaha saxophone and I'm playing on the mouthpiece that came with the horn. You know that mouthpiece sucks. Nobody wants to use that. No. But that's what they give you. And now you're expected to fight against the lawyer who's got whole squad.
Yeah,
there's
a
law firm with 20 deep lawyers that have had that have like it's experience got, yeah. on experience.
It's like Mesa Verde over there.
That's what I'm saying. And I'm like, you're trying to, you're that's what you're saying is a fair fight.
Are like, mouthpieces really like that?
Dude, yeah, you can't.
They're
do that
bad. Jesus.
Yes. It's like you got a Squire guitar and you're like, yeah, I'm going to go on tour, bro. Like, it's like you got to at least change out the electronics. You got to change out the strings. You got to change out the whole
guitar.
You got
to erase the Squire part.
Yeah, bro. Like anything you can do to get on the level. But that's what I'm saying. It's like, that's the point. It's like, it's really fear. And I hate to say it, but I love the term white fragility. But
right.
It really kind of explains clearly that it's like, I personally feel like all people are equals. But what I'm discovering is that it's not only that all people are equal. I think all people are equal. White people, I think, feel as though they are actually inferior in their hearts.
Yeah.
Because why, if not,
why are they so scared?
Why would you be so scared?
Yeah.
Why are you so afraid of us?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's why a lot of people say, yeah, white people are lucky that black people just want equality. We don't want revenge. Because they know that they've done wrong. They know that,
yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's that and also a power thing in my mind. The people in power feel threatened and scared that they're going to lose that power.
Well, think about this for a second. Like, we all got those friends. I call them one-uppers. It's like, dude, like, I'll be like, man, you know, I had a really good time this weekend. I went to a local concert in my neighborhood, right? And I went to a bar and saw a concert. My friend was like, oh, yeah, well, I went to Stevie Wonder's house and he played a private concert for me. And it's like, are you telling me that because you enjoyed the concert, or are you telling me that because you're trying to be better than me somehow? Is that like, that's why I keep asking people, like, what's your goal, right? If your goal is just to be better than me, then okay, but it seems like that happens at all levels. Like, even at the lowest levels, like, okay, like, dude, I got fries. Fine, I'm gonna get the fries with the cheese. And it's like, okay, I bought a house. Oh, yeah, well, I bought three houses. And it's like, no matter how much money or the situation, no matter how big or small, I think people, like, it's like human nature to just want to, like, dominate over other humans. Yeah,
people,
you know?
With the most, who dies with the most toys or whatever they say, you know?
Yeah, and so it's like, I think that's kind of why the problem is, like, even deeper than that, is, like, because you've got poor people trying to flex on other poor people.
Right.
And it's like, bro, you know, we're both poor, right? It's like, why, like, even that little bit of a leg up you may feel like you have on me, it's like, what is that doing for your life? It's not doing anything, you know?
And you can say the same thing about minorities being racist against other minorities. You know what I mean? It's like, well, you know, I felt a little bit shit on from this, but now these people are below me, so I can shit on them.
Yeah, well, it's that story about the bear, right? It's like, you don't have to outrun the bear. You just have to outrun the guy next to you.
Yeah.
And
you think there'd be sympathy, right? Like, amongst people that have been shit on. Like,
My thing is this. It's like, yeah, I guess I don't. You're right. If I outrun the bear, then I live and the other person dies. But I think the bigger message in that story is that whoever's telling that story is an asshole, because they had no regard for the other person.
Right.
The fact that the other person is going to get eaten by a bear and you don't care. So basically what this person's going to do is like, oh, you know, if there's a bear and me and my wife are out there, all you're saying is I have to outrun my wife because she's going to get eaten by the bear. No, dude, I have to solve the problem in a way. Oh, yeah, this is good. I have to solve the problem in a way in which my wife and I both survive. And so that leads me kind of to this Lights Out concept that I have. Do you remember the game Lights Out? It was it's a handheld game, and the goal of the game, it was like a 8x8 rectangle square or whatever, you know, 8x8 square, thank you, okay. Math. It's an 8x8 square, and it's got all these lights on it, and each time, it starts out with all the lights on, and your goal is to turn out all of the lights. The only problem is, when you turn out one of the lights, other lights pop up.
Yeah, I've seen
that. So you might turn off one, and the other one's, it's like a whack-a-mole, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying is, whenever people try and solve problems, the big mistake that they make is they only want to turn off one of the lights. But it's like, bro, you turn off one light, did you win the game or not? No, you lost the game. You have lost Lights Out. But we have to win. Okay, I turn off these two lights. Nope, there's still lights on. We're not done until all the lights are out. So if you have a problem, for instance, Black Lives Matter is saying, hey, we have a problem with the police. They are killing us a lot. The only thing you should say is, okay, let's solve that problem. If we can solve that problem, one of the lights goes out. But guess what? We're not done. Once that problem's solved, then yeah, let's go talk about black-on-black crime. Maybe the police can help. Maybe they can come help us solve that. And then we hit on that. Oh, man. Yeah, we're starting to solve some of that problem because we found out, oh yeah, it is. We studied our history, and yes, it's in the laws and systemic racism and redlining, and how can we, you know, start to fix those problems? But again, if your solution leaves someone out in the cold, and if your solution has anything that sounds like, oh yeah, but that's on you, or you need to just handle that yourself,
it's not a solution.
It doesn't seem like you're winning the game, right? I mean,
no, you've lost the game. You've failed at Lights Out. So if that's your method of problem solving, I'm sorry, but you are a failure. You don't have to be. That's where choice comes in.
Yeah,
you don't have to be a failure. You are choosing to be a failure, similar to people rocking Confederate flags. They lost, and you are choosing to lose, to be a loser, or to carry the losing team's flag. That should be treason in this country. Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
It's like, you know, when you're in an argument with someone and everything is so heated that no one's actually listening to what either person says, but they just kind of latch onto one word And then they, you know what I'm saying? And then they just try to defend that one word. They're like, well, you know, you said this. And then the fight ends up being about like what you just said and not about the underlying thing. I think that when people say, well, it's not Black Lives Matter, it's all lives matter. To me, white lives already mattered. And this is where my understanding of the terminology here. Well, white lives already mattered. So it's not about that all lives don't matter, but this movement is very specific because Black lives need to matter. White lives already mattered. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's why I don't get caught up on the semantics, bro. Yeah. I'm like, okay, cool. Let's do it this way. I don't like to ask people. I don't like to interject my opinion, first of all. I know it sounds funny because it's me talking about quote unquote my ideas, but I'm really just trying to talk about factual information that is not disagreeable. So I'm like, okay, cool. Like, let's talk. And I'm going to ask someone a yes or no question. I'm like, do you think it is wrong to kill someone else? Is it okay to take someone else's life? Yes or no? And they may say yes under these conditions. I'm like, okay, well then let's work with what I'll work with what I'm given. And we just got to kind of go like, I don't think you can solve a problem. I don't even want to say it's complex. This issue isn't complex at all. It's a very simple issue. Some people are very evil. That's how simple it is. But it's like, okay, if you want to make it complicated, okay, let's make it complicated. And now I'm going to make it simple. And we're going to break it down to its smallest pieces until at the end of this conversation, you're going to say Black Lives Matter because you don't have a choice. Or you can resign and say you're an asshole. But it's like, all lives matter. It's like, nah, dude, like, I understand that. But again, like, it's what people keep saying about like, oh, you got a bunch of houses on the street and one's on fire. You don't water the other houses. You water the one that's on fire, you dope.
That makes sense.
The cat liked that one.
The cat loved that one. Hang on, I got to go to my Facebook real quick because this one is, I posted this a couple days ago. Here we go. It says, someone posted this. It said, if my wife comes to me in obvious pain and asks, do you love me? An answer of, I love everyone would be truthful, but also hurtful and cruel in the moment. If a coworker comes to me upset and says, my father just died, a response of, everyone's parents die, would be truthful, but hurtful and cruel in the moment. So when a friend speaks up in a time of obvious pain and hurt and says, Black Lives Matter, a response of, all lives matter is truthful, but it's hurtful and cruel in the moment. The guy that
I love
said that it was Doug Williford.
Man, that's great.
Simple.
It's simple, but it's what I was trying to say, but a lot better.
Yeah, that's why I've been posting other people's stuff because some people have really like honed in on it.
We can do this all night, and we've said a lot. Is there anything you want to add, Randy? I mean, this has been great to have you on.
Man, thanks for having me. There is one last thing that I want to say.
Yeah.
And it's really everything that I do, I want to do it coming from a place of empathy and a place that ends in empathy, not just start with empathy, but end with empathy. So I'm making all my efforts, honestly, to empathize and understand people that disagree with me, specifically people who don't have my best interest in mind. Like, how can I understand what it's like to be a white person who feels like they're in danger because of looters and rioters in a very genuine sort of way.
Right.
What can it be like to be someone who would actually support Trump and feel that what he's saying is legitimate? Because I know that his history and his track record will show you if you look into it, though most people don't. A lot of people don't have time, they feel, to look into some of the terrible things that he's done and the fact that he's actually not really a great businessman. Most of his businesses have failed. But he's also kind of cheated the game a lot, and he's been successful at not playing by the rules. In fact, a lot of things that his base, if they knew his history and how much it hurts them, they would be very upset. But I want to understand where they're coming from, because I think we can all win. It's like the lights out game. I think we can all win, but it's got to be, I'm like constantly asking myself, like, am I doing this out of love? Am I doing this out of empathy? Am I trying to understand the other person, or am I trying to crush them? And as long as I'm always empathetic, actually, to be honest, if I'm empathetic, it actually becomes easier to crush you because I understand your heart and I know where you're coming from and I know what makes you tick. and what you feel. And luckily for people, I'm not out to crush you. I'm out to help you because I understand that if I help you, you're going to be in a better place to help me. And if I help myself, I'll be in a better place to help you. So if you help me, guess what? That helps you. And we all help each other and we could all be further along. And so it's funny because the guy, the white dude who hates me the most doesn't realize that by helping me, he's actually so much closer to helping himself have a better life. Because that's all I want to do is help him have a better life. I want to get to a place where we don't need police because everyone's needs are met. Why would I steal from you? It's a waste of my time to steal from you because now you're taking me away from my family. I'd have to leave my wife and my cats and my friends to come rob you, and that's not a good use of my time. I'd rather come and bring you something so that we can be friends and you can become family than to steal from you or take from you. So I guess if I had any sort of closing words, it's again like, whatever you're doing, before you open your mouth, have you empathized with your enemy enough to realize that maybe this person that you're calling your enemy is much closer to your friend, your brother, your mother, your father, or someone that you love deeply? You guys have a lot more in common than you think, and try and hear each other out. And if what you're saying doesn't come from a place of trying to put out all the lights and make sure everyone's fed, healthy, and happy, then maybe don't say anything at all.
Man, I love that. Yeah, Randy. Again, man, thanks so much for doing this. And, you know, hopefully people listen to this and get a new perspective, or maybe it just strengthens the perspective they already have.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for having me on the show. It's a good hang.
And, you know,
hell yeah.
Stay safe, man. I hope you and the wife are good. All right, brother. Talk soon.
All right, man. Later.
Questions, comments, episode ideas, hate mail. You can get in touch with us by contact form, email, or voicemail, all of which are available at our website, theperformerspathway.com. If one of your questions or topics makes it into the podcast, with your consent, of course, you'll receive a shiny new $10 gift card for use at mymusicmasterclass.com. That's our sister website, which contains over 600 original educational videos from your musical heroes. So we look forward to hearing from you.